Spilling Realty Podcast with Alex and Kendall.
Welcome back to another episode of Spilling Realty. I'm Kendall Gray, and I am here with my co-host, the one, the only, the Maryland Mortgage Dad, Alex.
How's it going, Kendall?
Good. So we are coming to you today from a studio. This is so exciting. We're really making it big. I mean, you know, you've made it when you went from Zoom to a studio. None of that would be possible without all of you. So thank you so much. So we are so excited bringing you better content, better audio, better video. So let's just kind of get into it. And we have a really great guest here today. So I'm going to throw it to Alex, and he is going to do the intro.
Yeah, I'm excited that our first guest to christen this place, if you will, is a good friend of mine who also happens to own Harford Retirement Planners. He's the author of Decades and Decisions, Financial Planning at Any Age. And he has been featured in The Wall Street Journal, Kiplinger, Yahoo Finance, Investopedia, I'm not done, Consumer Reports, Reader's Digest, The Baltimore Business Journal, Daily Report, U.S. News and World Report, and Fox. He's a husband, father of three, and a Pinewood Derby enthusiast who will exchange Pokemon cards for child labor. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Conley.
What an intro. Thank you.
Wow,
you
got it. So you're really a big deal. I had no idea.
No.
Kind of a big deal.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This is really exciting. How are you?
Glad to be here. No, this is awesome. And, you know, in the studio, I feel like honored to be the first guest with this type of level of production and everything.
Yeah, this is great. So let's just start. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Give us the 411, the background. Before we get into everything that you do and the services you offer, who are you?
Sure. So Joe Conroy. I'm a little bit of a Renaissance man, so every once in a while, just on the personal side, I get into these different hobbies. Pinewood Derby was a natural progression for my woodworking hobbies that I was doing. First and foremost, I'm a family man, so wife and kids at the very top. It really drives the engine to what I do, my professional life. I want balance. I want to be able to spend time with them. But I've gotten into woodworking, I'm a car guy, I've got all these different hobbies, and then somehow fit in time for financial planning and work.
So jack of all trades.
Master of none, except for financial planning. I got one down. The rest of it, you know, we get better as we go.
Yeah, parenting's always it's an ongoing experiment.
That's
itself,
definitely a work in progress.
Are you from here?
Yeah, so born in Catonsville, and then basically grew up in Harford County. So I went to middle school, high school, and then college, where I met my wife, Jane. Then we moved back to Harford County. Both of us worked in Towson. And I said to her, she's from Towson, I'm from Harford County. I said, we both work in Towson. Shouldn't we move closer to where we work? She said, no, I like Harford County more. And it's where my family and my friends are, so I didn't fight it. And Harford County's home for me. So eventually ended up moving my business to Harford County, and that's where we are.
So tell us a little bit about the services that you offer. Where do you fit in within the wheelhouse of financial planning? I don't know if you might have to go financial advising. What do you want me to say?
Either one. You can say both.
Oh, I can say both.
Because it's confusing, and I'll explain it.
Well, yeah. No, I know. Some people are picky. So tell us about where you fit in with the wheelhouse of financial planning and what services you offer.
Sure. So I'm a CFP, or Certified Financial Planner. So that means that when I'm sitting across the table from clients, we're not just going to go and nitpick and chart to death the different portfolios and mutual funds and ETFs, and we do that. But a lot of the conversation surrounds, do we have a right plan in place to retire? What kind of income streams in retirement? Education planning, is there enough money saved up for school? Estate planning. We don't do wills, but we definitely coordinate with the state attorneys. So it's kind of like the quarterback or the head coach, if you will, of your financial life. So
it's a great analogy.
Yeah. So we do a little bit of everything, and we help kind of bring it all together. Now, if we see a need for, a trust or something, we bring in the attorney and we help coordinate that. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of a generalist, like your primary care doctor.
Okay.
And then you kind of specialize down from there. You have, people you can refer out for basically anything that they need.
Yeah, so we're happy to coordinate. If you have a trusted insurance person or a trusted CPA, we'll coordinate with them. And if you're kind of, I don't have anybody, we'll refer you to a few that we've done work with and like.
Yeah, man. How are you and your company kind of staying ahead of the game to attract and like appeal to younger audiences, especially like in a generation that demands instant gratification?
TikTok.
Yep, that's a good one.
And social media. So we're right. probably one of the only financial planning firms that are utilizing video and TikTok. We really embraced, we just kind of got lucky. It's not like we had this master plan. We embraced social media marketing back in like 2019. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And roughly around there. And then when 2020 hit, I couldn't be face-to-face with clients because of COVID. So we did a lot of video messaging, sent it out to clients in addition to phone calls and other stuff that we could do. And I wasn't sure because a lot of my clientele at that time was kind of retired age, you know, 60s, 70s. Sure. Not so much the YouTube generation. And we're sending these videos of YouTube, me talking about the markets and how to think about them. And we sat back and waited for, you know, the response. And everyone said, Joe, we love this. We didn't feel like we needed to call you, but we were happy to hear what your thoughts were at that specific time. And it's all consistent with the message that we've done over years. So it's just a good reinforcement of the work that we've done.
Well, I also think with social media, because look, financial planning is not something people want to talk about. It's also boring, but it's also intimidating because yeah. it's like, okay, I feel like I have to have $10,000, $20,000 plus dollars to invest. If I don't have that, am I automatically disqualified? So I think it's cool that you incorporate social media because it's a little bit more relatable.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I was also part of the, so when I wrote the book, it was to try to share the messages that I do in the conference room with folks who necessarily don't maybe have enough money to invest, or they don't want to work with a financial advisor, or just a way to kind of scale out the stuff. Because it is something I'm passionate about. I've seen firsthand the progress clients can make personally when they've got their financial stuff in order, kind of lifts that burden. But the funny thing, Alex, to answer your question, is I thought social media was going to get the younger people, and it has.
Yeah.
But the boomer generation, for lack of a better term, really appreciate it just as much, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah. They're on TikTok too, believe it or not.
My
yeah.
dad's on Instagram.
Yeah.
And he just turned 75.
Bob Gray's on Instagram.
Bob Gray is on Instagram.
Bob, you gotta follow me, man. What's going on? Bob Gray
and he
me
loves it. He was like, how do I do? And he works in the nonprofit sector in Florida, and
yep.
he said it's been great. And I was like, Dad, you what? Like, what is okay?
You know what really sold me? What sold me on it first was, I think it was like 2019, I did a speaking engagement with first responders, and there were 80 people in the room.
Jeez.
And it took, I don't know, hours of coordination, schedules, what am I going to talk about? I get up there, like the whole day, it took a few hours to do the thing. The presentation was only 20 minutes, and I had 80 people in that room. The first video we did, which was horrible, and it's all on YouTube, so you can look at the first video. So I look like
looking
a,
at it.
I look like a hostage victim, you know. But some of those videos, they were getting 400 views, and it took an hour start to finish. And I'm like, in 1 hour, I can reach 400 people, whereas this whole in-person thing, it took me hours, and only got 80 people. Mm-hmm. And I can put out a lot more video and reach more people with less effort than trying to do the in-person stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Less planning too, you know, in coordination with third parties and what have you. So
yeah.
Yeah, social media is a huge tool for us for sure.
We know, Alex. Yeah. You're also famous on social media. We know.
In my own mind, maybe. But Joe, what's the biggest pushback or obstacle you face when working with new clients? Is it like trusting the economy, trusting you? Like where do you kind of see that?
Or being afraid they don't maybe have enough and maybe you don't want to work with them,
right?
You know?
There's a few obstacles I think that people have in their heads, and trust is the biggest one. Mm-hmm. You have to trust. If you're going to hand someone your life savings or work towards that goal, you have to know that they've got your best interest at heart. And not just a warm smile. You have to do a good job. There's a lot of ways you can build trust. The other one, too, is people are afraid because they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
When I go to the doctor, I'm very upfront. Like, I don't know medical stuff at all.
Yeah.
So, and talk to me like I'm a third grader.
Yeah.
Something with financial planning, I feel like people have this perception they're supposed to know more than they do. But it's not taught in schools. Parents don't talk about it because it's taboo. Really, people get their advice from social media talking heads, mm-hmm. you know, me excluded, and friends around the fire pit and all this stuff. So you get a lot of these like good intention kind of sound clips, but it could send you on a path where it's not really that good. Mm-hmm. So hearsay financial advice, I think, clouds the education that people need. Mm-hmm. But those are the two biggest things. The third one is I feel like I don't have enough. Everybody feels that way. I've got a client with $10 million and he's afraid of retirement.
What? Why?
Yeah.
Exactly. I will retire right now.
Yeah.
Right. What are you talking about?
So, but I also tell him that's the reason why you have $10 million, because you don't feel comfortable enough. So you got that little bit of fear chasing you towards more stability when he's got enough stability, I think, for a couple lifetimes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I want to quickly backtrack a little bit. You're an accomplished author. What is the title of your book? And can you just give us another summary of what your book is about?
Sure. So it's Decades and Decisions, Financial Planning at Any Age. It's not meant to read it from page one all the way to whatever, 200 something. So it's broken down by chapter. So if you're in your 20s, generally what I find as a practicing financial advisor is that people have like the same things they're working on in their 20s. Just getting started, working your careers, maybe college debt. And then 30s is the next chapter, and so on and so forth. So hopefully it gives the reader permission where they don't have to read the entire book. You can just jump right into your section and then maybe bounce ahead, bounce back. Did I miss anything I was supposed to do last decade?
So for that, and if it's broken by like age or decade, whatever, where do younger people start? Where would you advise that younger people start fresh out of college?
I think the biggest thing people just getting started is building habits. You know, if you're going to the gym for the first time or you're trying to build wealth for the first time, don't focus on how much you can bench press or how fast you can run a mile. Just work on improvement. So setting up things, making it automatic, creating a plan where you're spending less than you make. That's the biggest one, because you can't do anything with finance unless you've got some money left over.
Right.
And then make it automatic where that money's going to something, and then you can get it better. But those habits you build in your 20s will carry you through, and you can be that person with $10 million plus, like I mentioned before. It was built on good habits, not a windfall, not an inheritance, or a lottery win.
Jinx.
Self-made.
Yeah.
So start with good habits, work on the fundamentals, and then go from there.
That's good advice. What's one piece of advice you would give your 20-something self? Financial advice. What would you, if you could go back in time, what would you say? Is it this? Habits, discipline?
Habits, discipline. I don't know. It's kind of funny because I'm more the entrepreneur mindset.
Uh-huh.
So I've taken risks that I would not advise other people to take by betting on myself a little bit. But I'll go back and, you know, it's funny. So like I remember one of my first purchases, I started making a little bit of money. I mean, like literally just a little bit. And I bought a Samsung 46-inch TV.
Oh, you're balling.
And I was like, this is all. I negotiated. I went back and forth to Circuit City and Best Buy.
That's
and
great.
The manager's like, I didn't even know you can negotiate this stuff. I'm like, I don't know if you can, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
I got a free PlayStation out of it. Anyway.
Jeez. That's funny. Yeah, that's a win.
So I spent $1,600 on a TV that now, who knows where it is. And that $1,600, if I would have invested it in 2008, you know, it would be like $5,000 or more now if I did it the right way. So time value of money, I would have been more thoughtful, but also doing the entrepreneur thing, I really didn't make much money until it kind of picked up steam.
Well, yeah.
But it's never too early to start. You never have like enough money to invest. So just do it.
Just go for it.
Yeah. You know, I love how you've woven your family kind of into the fabric of your business. You know, obviously Jane, your wife, seems like your biggest fan. I saw the kids were kind of involved.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes your biggest critic, right?
She said the book was, quote, not that bad. That's so, high praise. Yeah. So I was like,
7 out of 10, right.
Yeah, 7 out of 10, for sure.
And I saw the kids were kind of involved in the construction of your new office, which is going to be on Main Street in Bel Air. So what other ways do you ensure that you can kind of handle work-life balance as a business owner, you know, three young kids, all that stuff?
So one thing I have done since before we had kids was I don't check emails after 5 o'clock at night or on weekends. Markets are closed. If I get something, you know, a person sends a question at 8 p.m., I can't do anything about that until 9 a.m. anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So all I'll do is just think about it in my head. How do I, you know... And usually it's not a complaint, it's like a request or something, but I can't do anything about it. And it just clouds the space of, you know, being present with my kids. The other thing with my kids is I want them to see, set a good example and lead by example. Mm-hmm. So we do some nonprofit work through the company, and I try to include the kids. We've done, actually, this was a funny one. Instead of doing a lemonade stand, we did an orange crunch stand. So it was just orange juice, Sprite. It didn't have Tito's or anything in it. And then crushed ice. And we sold that. And the money that we got, we ended up donating to a couple of nonprofits that we support.
That's awesome.
I love that.
And then I bring them to the office so they can see hopefully what we're building. And then I don't know if any of the stuff, like, they'll remember later on in life. But I'm sure it'll stick somewhere, even though they're young.
Right.
So I try to just bring them in, include them in everything, and hopefully it's all good stuff.
Yeah, and throw as much good stuff at them as you can.
It's probably better than...
it sticks.
Yeah, than like, you know, Daddy took me to the horse races all the time. So, you know...
You're a tavern kid, right?
Right, exactly.
With setting boundaries, because that's always something that's difficult. I know that when I first started out in real estate, I felt I had to say yes, 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 answer every call.
Yeah.
And I ran myself into the ground like, there's no need to call me at 1:45 because you're freaking out about something, you know? So did it take you a while to realize and prioritize and implement boundaries? Because I think that is something that I think we've talked about this all the time.
Yeah.
And it is hard to do.
Right.
Like, so is that something that with your experience and growth that you were like, okay, yes, like this is what I have to do. Not just for your family, but for your own sanity.
Yeah. I think it would be harder to set those boundaries after you've already been like the 24/7 pro. So I worked at an office previous to where I am now, where we had multiple different advisors from different backgrounds. And some of them were like, I'm 24/7. You know, you can call me, here's my cell phone number, here's all that stuff. And I was like, and then they would tell me all the reasons why that really didn't work out that well, but they kind of went down that path and felt like they were afraid clients would be upset if they couldn't call them at 9 p.m. at night. So I just set the expectations up before. So I'm actually like a terrible salesperson. I just like tell you, here's the deal, right? Up front, you know, I'm not going to beat the S&P 500 every single year. Nobody can consistently do that. And if they do, they're like Warren Buffett. You don't have access to them. Or they're not going to share their secrets with you.
Right. Because why would they? Yeah.
I'm not 24/7, but I can tell you during regular business hours, I'm your advocate. I'm a champion for your success. And I'm there for you. You're not going to not hear from me. You're not going to wait a week for a return phone call. I'm there for you, but during regular business hours. Otherwise, you get burnt out, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how resentful. It was my first year. Yeah. But I was, because when you're as a real estate agent, I'm an entrepreneur. So it's like, I have to say yes, because like, what if I lose a deal? Like, it's they don't teach you that in real estate, like when you're taking your classes or really anything. And I just think that's something that's so important. And what I found from interviewing, you know, very successful people like yourself is that is the common thread is you have to set boundaries.
Yep. Right.
And I just love that. I mean, I still struggle a little bit, but I am getting better. Because, again, there's no need. I don't need to talk to you at 11 o'clock.
I think it's a fear of rejection, right? Like, if I don't take this phone call, they're going to go find somebody else.
Exactly.
But that's more of our mental construct than I think it is the reality for what clients are. Like, I guess they're putting their kids to bed.
Right.
Or,
like, hey, we do have lives.
Yeah, most people are reasonable, I think, about that stuff. So,
you know?
Yeah. I think so, too. But, again, I think starting out, you know, you just don't, it's being a yes person. Yes, 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 yes. And then that, like you said, you end up getting really burnt out. You're resentful.
Yeah.
But I just think that's something that's important. I wanted to just reemphasize is boundaries because it's hard.
Yeah. A lot of us learn that the hard way, you know? Yeah, me too.
Not going to lie.
Kendall, you want to do one more and then we can hop into plead the fifth?
I do. Okay. So before we hop into plead the fifth, which I'll explain, what will your legacy be?
So I remember my wife's, through married family, there was the grandfather, he was the patriarch of the family, passed away, grew up in a prominent Baltimore neighborhood, had like a boatload of kids, and full church, everybody remembered him fondly. Legacy is something I've thought about more and more, even though I'm in my mid, late 30s. I've had clients that have passed away, and, you know, I want my legacy to be everything that I've touched, I've left in better shape than before I found it. I want there to be a week-long mourning locally where everybody has to be sad and remember me and be crying every day, all day. I told Jane, you know, you have to live the rest of your life just in constant mourning and be, you know, think about me 24/7. No, I'm kidding about that. But
we're black 24/7.
Yeah. Exactly. No, but I would like to leave the world better than I found it. It's why we've got a charitable foundation that I created at work. We do volunteer days every other month for nonprofits. I don't oversell and underdeliver. I just give people frank advice and try to create an organization where I'm setting up my team for success and eventually to take ownership over like years down the road.
Yeah.
So actually, I'll tell you one thing. My legacy, there was a client or an attorney that I was working through a situation from a work thing, leaving an old firm. And anyway, so he said, Joe, I know it's tough right now. He said, but in every deal, he gave me this advice. The attorney said, in every deal, you want to leave meat on the bone. I said, what does that mean? He said, even if you've got something where maybe an advisor's retiring and you could buy their business and really like lowball them and they have to take your offer, he said, you always want to leave meat on the bone because the universe and karma, he's like, I know it sounds silly coming from me, the attorney, but it's true. Eventually, a client's going to question maybe something that you're doing with them and they're going to go back to that selling advisor and they're going to say, hey, is Joe doing a good job? And you don't want them to have a sour taste of, you know, Joe really kind of turned the screws on me when he you know, took advantage. So that means that to me, you got to create a win-win-win for everybody. So being completely transparent, win-win-win for everybody, that's the way you leave everything better than you found it. And hopefully that's the legacy that I'm building over time.
I love that.
That's a great answer.
Well, thank you. I just want to quickly, before we get into plead the fifth, here's just a few takeaways that I gathered from this interview and how you set yourself apart from other people. And it's education, communication,
yes,
boundaries, and consistency and discipline. And I think those all really hit home and sum it up. And I think it's really great. So
yeah, I agree.
Alex, do you have anything else before I do play the fifth?
No, I'm good. Let's it's time to let me cook.
All right. So this is Alex's favorite part, everybody. All right, everybody. It is time for our favorite and Alex's favorite segment of the podcast, which is Plead the Fifth. We are about to put Joe in the hot seat and ask him a round of rapid-fire questions. He has not been prepped. He has no idea. We've gotten a lot of dirt from his friends and family, and we can't wait. So let's get it started, Alex.
All right. So the first question, as always, is a favorite schoolyard game of mine, I guess when we were older, right? Not when we were in elementary school. Shag, Marry, Kill. Since you're a financial guy, I decided that we would go with three, I guess financial personalities.
Okay.
So your choices are Dave Ramsey, Jim Cramer, and Ben Stein.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. This is out there. Now I probably have a red face. I definitely wear, if I get embarrassed, you can see it.
Well, we'll contrast it out. You'll be fine.
No,
keep it. That's good.
No, all
right.
Everybody gets so funny about this part. I know. It's so great.
It's great.
I would, Ben Stein, we'll say Shag.
Okay. He's got the glasses going. I can see that.
Yeah.
Very good.
And then Dave Ramsey, Mary.
Okay.
I don't agree with everything, but his advice will keep you out of trouble, and it's good for beginners and people who want it simple.
Right.
And then Kale would be Jim Cramer. He's a personality. He's designed to entertain you on CNBC. His purpose isn't to give you advice and guidance for a successful long-term retirement plan.
Okay.
There you go.
Rank your children in order from least to most favorite.
Least favorite?
I'm just kidding, but you can answer.
Oh, we definitely have a ranking system. It changes, though.
Okay.
It's an ever-changing system.
It's evolving, and my answer day by day might be different. Last would be Piper. She's our three-year-old, so
that's
she
awesome
woke
name.
Us up at 12:30 last night.
Yeah.
Piper. You can't do that.
Yep. Can't do that, Piper. So we had...
Gotta work harder.
We had a negotiation with a three-year-old at 12:30 at night, which is the last thing I wanted to do.
They're like terrorists. You can't negotiate with them.
But you know what? I was successful, and instead of crawling into bed with us, which we're like not letting her do, but sometimes she just forces, she slept in her own bed, and Jane was like, "Yeah, good work. Bravo." So,
there you go.
So she's last.
Okay.
As of this morning.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. But she's cute. And when I come home, I will say this. So I have to say something nice. Every time I come home, she runs into the garage and she's like, "Daddy," and like barely waits for me to open the door and jumps in my arms. So yeah. Then, you know, then she's first.
Right, exactly.
That's so funny.
Yep. Yeah.
My actual follow-up question, because I didn't think you were going to answer that, is actually, what's the most challenging thing about being a father?
About being a father? I don't know. Just trying to be like the perfect version of yourself so that you set good examples.
It's a lot of pressure.
Because we're very flawed. Everybody, you know, we lose our patience or, you know, we play on our phone too much or whatever. But I think, as with anything in life, if you go into it with the best possible intentions and try to get better, that's as good as you can do.
Yeah.
So, that being said, I was on TikTok while they were watching cartoons a little bit and probably, like, wasn't present as much as I could last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it's a process of improvement.
Yeah. I think as long as you catch yourself doing that, though, and you're, like, you recognize it and you stop, like, that's the best you can do. Right. Like you said, we're all flawed.
Now, to be fair, what they were watching was horribly boring, so.
It wasn't Bluey or anything?
No, it wasn't.
Dude, I've been caught, like, my wife and kids leave the house, and I'll be sitting there on the couch just, like, still watching Bluey. You know?
Yeah, so that one's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good one. So a little birdie told me that your nickname is Joey Wiggs. How did that come about?
We've got a really close neighborhood group. Actually, it started with a couple of YouTube videos that I did for, not YouTube, well, they're on YouTube, but some LinkedIn financial advisors. They have this Truthful Mutual series where there's some life insurance-based financial advisors that lead, like, product and insurance. You know, like Oprah, like, you get a car, you get a car. Yeah. They're like, you get a big life insurance policy, you get a big life insurance policy. This one's going to be super expensive. So they do this funny series where it kind of combats that. So they gave me this tiny cameo, and it was Joe Roycon, and I was supposed to be the top, like, life insurance salesperson. And they were like, "Joe, we just need you to read, like, these two lines and, like, give us a little clip, send it to us, we'll put it together." Well, I turned it into this whole side series, and I had a wig, and it was like a yellow blonde. Anyway, so
I
then
I saw a picture of that. Yep.
It's like your alter ego.
So it was really funny. So Truthful Mutual, Joe Roycon, we did a spinoff. I had my son in one of the spinoff things. But then in the neighborhood with these friends, all these young families, we've got kids the same age. I bring out a wig or two every once in a while.
That's funny.
And surprise everybody with it. And it's very silly.
Okay. You guys have lived there for what now? 5 years?
So. Since 2017.
Okay,
so,
yeah. So going on cross-dressing for 6 years.
Noted.
Yeah. Got it.
What's the number one thing your wife does that gets on your nerves? Choose wisely or plead the fifth?
Oh.
You can plead the fifth. That is an option.
So she is big into organizing, and I have to plug the Simplified Home. She has turned the greatest source of my agitation at home into a business.
Okay.
I think she weaponized it against me because now I can't complain if she's going to start bringing in paychecks. But anyway. So she's really good at organization. But what that means is that every time I come home, there's like a 50-50 shot. If I'm looking for something, it's a new game of hide and seek. Like, where's my iPhone charger? Mm-hmm. Where do we put, where are the cups now? They're in a different place. There's like a new organization. Yeah. I have no idea.
Right.
So, but just recently she started her own side business, which is super fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because I'm the entrepreneurial type, so I get to talk to her about, you got to set up this, you know, get your own LLC, get insurance coverage, have contracts, you know, make sure it's all on the up and up. So if anybody has a messy room or, like, kids' playroom or just a messy house in general, contact Jane, the Simplified Home on Instagram, and she can help you out.
Well, actually, just, like, quickly, you know, they're, like, I'll get her info, but that's really big in real estate right now because a lot of these people that are older are downsizing and moving into assisted living or moving to Florida. I can tell you how often I get asked, do you know anybody that can come and help organize or, like, help downsize, which falls into that, so... Yep. Look at that.
There you go.
Wait, so organizing is the biggest pet peeve, but also, like, something you like?
Yeah, because I have no idea where stuff is when I come home.
Good save. Good save.
Yeah. You know, so I'm happy for her, but...
She's monetizing it, though.
Yeah. At least, like, you know, it's a profitable agitation.
Yeah.
Yep. That's okay. Good.
That's fair.
And I know we're kind answer. Of. I know we're up against the clock here too. I have one more for
Close
you.
Close that out.
You had a traumatic experience in kindergarten regarding a pirate costume. Care to elaborate on that?
Yeah. So one day we're running late. I was so my mom and my dad thankfully went and split up. They get along great. Great relationship with both. They get along anyway. So my mom's taking me to kindergarten, and it's Halloween, so you have to dress up. So I, like, before there was Captain Jack Sparrow, I was dressing up like a pirate. I had the makeup, you know, the dark eye makeup. I had the hat, the outfit, the whole thing. I remember saying something to my mom. She said, no, like, don't worry about it. And when we finally, like, got to school, I was late, right? So I'm the last one to come in class. And, you know, as soon as that door opens, all the kids go... Yeah, look over. I walk in dressed as a pirate. Everybody else is in regular clothes. The thing that I said to my mom was, I don't think the costume party is today. She's like, of course it is. I said, I think it's tomorrow. She's like, don't be silly. So I'm in kindergarten, and there's no cell phones, and I'm in kindergarten. I can't, like, text my mom and say, you know, you got me here. So I ran out, and I, like, tried to wipe all the makeup off, which just, like, smeared it around more. And I was literally dressed as a pirate the entire day.
All day.
That's and awesome. Then I don't know. I think I've tried to put it back out of my memory.
Yeah, didn't mean to bring that up.
I don't know what I did the next day when everybody did dress up. Like, do you go again? What's the protocol when you dress up like a goofball and then everybody else dresses up the next day?
I don't know.
I think I was over it. I think it's when the camp's closed.
I would have, again, this is like 37-year-old me, but I would have dressed up as like a normal kid that day and just, like, made fun of myself.
But, I think so. Yeah.
At 5 years old, though, I probably would have been traumatized. So.
Yes, it took years. Years to get over it.
Well, now that Joe has, I guess, more therapy bills on the docket, we'll let him go on that note.
I'll let you close it out.
All right, cool. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us again. This has been a great episode. So happy to Chris in this beautiful studio here with Joe Conroy of Hartford Retirement Planners. And we'll see you next time.
And also, let's give a shout out to the awesome production team that is here with us. You guys are great.
Yes.
Give them a shout out.
Gene, Brad, thank you so much. Guys, you've been awesome. Oh, and I guess one last thing. I know you mentioned you have a charity, you have a foundation, and you support some nonprofits. Do you want to shout them out too?
Yeah, so we created the Hartford Retirement Planners Community Fund because we wanted to have as many words as possible in it. And then I do a lot of nonprofit work with Found in Faith. They move furniture from those that are downsizing and give it to those that are referred in need.
That's great.
So Mike and I, every other month, we're basically the young bags. Everybody's like 65 or older, so we move all the heavy stuff.
Okay.
So if you're in Hartford County and you've got furniture that's in good condition, Found in Faith would be a great option. They take it. We've seen the work that they've, you know, we've moved it into homes, and those people are very happy and appreciative.
That's fantastic.
So thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for always tuning in. This has been a blast. We're going to call it a day. Alex, thank you. Joe, thank you. We'll see you next week. Same time, fresh tea. Bye.
See you.